Okay, and one of the most exciting parshios in Chumash Bamidbar, of which there are many exciting parshios, we study the parsha, Parsha Shlach, this week, coming Shabbos, which of course begins with its responsibility, Shlach Lecha and Hashem, send people for you. And the question has to be raised, why does the Gemara, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say Shlach Lecha to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why did he not say Shlach Lecha and Hashem, send the people for me? To which the Gemara in Sota Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis explains that Hashem didn't want to send the spies. Rabbi Shechter quotes in the name of his Rabbi, Rabbi Soloveitchik, who noted that in Chumash Devarim they were referred to as Meraglim, but here they're only referred to as Anoshim, Shlach Lecha Anoshim. And the difference, Rabbi Shechter explained, is that the idea of sending the Meraglim was not to spy it out, to spy out the land, but rather to check it out like a person goes on a date, or sometimes like a person should be going on a date. Sometimes we actually have that problem in our world. The fact of the matter is, in Chumash Devarim, it became apparent that even as they left, they had already decided that they were going to come back with a negative report. And thus there, they are already referred to as Meraglim. The people are already identified with the negative report that they had intended to offer. But at the time that God made the offer, the people weren't aware of what they were going to do, and so therefore it was Anoshim, and the hope was that they would gain from the process. Sadly, they chose not to. Same thing is true with us in our Shidduch world. Sometimes we spend so much time getting to know the Shidduchim so well. We need all the dirt, as I was told recently. A person needs to understand you don't need a dirt in a Shidduch. You need to find good things to say. If there's dirt to be found, then obviously that's a halachic discussion. But that the fact that it's a given that there is dirt to be found, that's a problem, and it's drawing our people apart. The Torah tells us that one of the charges that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the people was, V'hischazaktem ulekachtem mipri ha'aretz. You'll be strengthened, and we'll take from the fruit of the land. And the great Rav Moshe Wolfson, Shalita the Mashgiach in Torah V'das, and the Rav of Emunas Yisrael in Bar Park, explained that the spies were going to need strengthening not to be caught up in the corruption. And thus he told them to take from Mipri Haaretz, from the fruit of the land. And the reason is simple. By taking of the fruit, the people would be swayed by the purity and truth that they would put into the fruit, and the fruit would put into the people. Bermayim Chaim adds that through the fruit, there's a certain Kedusha, that it's the greatness of Hashem that comes from Kedusha Haaretz. And so sometimes when you just hold and behold something so special and unique, it helps you go ahead and handle the situation. And so, of course, we know that the Meraglim come back and they offer their negative process, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at the people when they cry all night, and Moshe Rabbeinu has to daven, Hashem kel rachum b'chanan erech apayim b'rav chesed. And he never mentions the fact that Hashem has an attribute of emes. We know from Parshas Kisisa that there is a phrase of emes, but it doesn't appear here, and the question has to be, why? So Rav Yashiv Zatzal explained that the Zohar HaKadosh points out that we cannot mention a midah b'Hashem if we don't know how to use it properly. In this context, the Meraglim did not use the element of truth. They lied. And that's what caused the problem over here. And so the midah of emes was not important to them. And so ergo Moshe Rabbeinu left it off his list of midos when he identified the midos of Hashem. And it's an important klal in life. If you're going to daven for something using a particular attribute to try to get on that side, you better be a fully understanding aspect of Hashem's use of that side, or you will run a risk of causing damage. And a person needs to know that as well. Torah adds, Be'abdi Kalev, Ekev haya ruach acheres bo, my servant Kalev, since he had a different spirit. What kind of spirit? What was this ruach acheres? Sir Zadel Epstein, Zechat Tzadok Livracha, suggested that it came in the form of his bonenus. It came forth in the ability to consider and recognize that there are challenges that will attempt to thwart a tzaddik from achieving his destiny. Kalev saw that, and thus he went to Hebron in order to stay off the attempt to corrupt him by his Yetzer Hara. He had that awareness, that Ruach HaCheres, and that's what saved his life. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Ma'apilim when they decided the next day to go ahead, Hinanu Ve'alinu. So Moshe said to them, Lamadu Atem Ovrim Espi Hashem v'hi lo sitzlach. Why do you violate the word of Hashem and you know it's not going to be successful? In fact, the entire episode of the Ma'apilim seems odd in that the people declare that they were wrong for rebelling against Hashem, and then immediately, or so it seems, did it again by attacking and forging onward. If the whole sin of the Meraglim was the fact that they didn't listen to Hashem, how could they not listen again? So Rabbi Chanan Samet Shalita, one of the great Tanakh teachers out of Haaretz Zion, explains that the Ma'apilim thought that since they had done tshuva, it's a test to see if they had truly resolved to enter the land of Israel. That this whole concept of 40 years was just really going to be a continued test, and that Hashem really wanted them to attempt. Their fervor, says Rav Samet, was to be applauded, but their intention to detail led to their downfall. We can have a lot of spiritual fervor in our lives, and we can understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to strive for certain things in life. Big things, big goals. But, of course, at the very core of it, it has to be a belief in the word of Hashem and the desire to follow the word of Hashem. We point out afterwards, v'yayin l'nesach, the concept of the fact that there needs to be nesachim that are offered as karbanos. So Sifri suggests that the idea of offering nesachim, the idea of offering libations, was obligatory only upon entering Eretz Yisrael, where it applied even to the Bamas HaYachid. So Rabbi Yaakov Haber, Shalita of Eretz Yisrael, suggested once that the true test of elevating all of creation through all the faculties of man would only come in the Eretz Yisrael, where all the mitzvos would be put into action. And so consequently, Nesachim, which Rav Kook Zatzal explains represent the added dimension of sanctification of all aspects of life, only applied to the individual upon entry into the land. When a person came into Eretz Yisrael, he would have the chance to be makdish everything he did for Hashem, both individually when he'd be working his own land, and of course collectively as part of the tzibur. And so Nesachim couldn't have been obligatory until they got into Eretz Yisrael, because the whole purpose of the Nesach was in order to be able to bring things up towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The last word in the parasha I'd like to suggest before we turn to the Haftorah is a concept that appears in the parasha of Tzitzis. We say, the los asuru, and you shouldn't be swayed, acharei levavchem, acharei neichem, after your hearts and after your eyes. So the late great Mira Shiva of Nachum Persovitz wrote in one of his notebooks that the human eye takes pictures at a rapid pace. The heart serves as the photo development center of the human, and the brain is the storage and processing unit. Now that brain works full time and is constantly working all the time. What it works on and whether it will be positive or wasted is dependent upon the person and dictated by how the person looks at the world around him. And so thus it's important that we be careful what we look at in order to protect our greatest investment, ourselves. The lo sasuru, it starts with the eyes. Right, but then it affects the entirety of the human being. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read about how Rachab Hazona saved the Meraglim who came in the time of Yoshua, and she lowers them down by the rope that goes through the window. And the Gemara in Zvachim on Daf Kuftes Zayin Amud Beis notes that the rope that was used by Rachab's customers to gain access to her home, and now it was being used as some sort of tshuva, and saving the lives of Kalev and Pinchas. The Gemara in Megillah adds that she later converted and married Yoshua and became a matriarch to 8 future prophets, including Yirmiyahu HaNavi. So Yalkut Shimoni adds that after being thrown in as a punishment to a pit, Yirmiyahu was lifted out of a pit by ropes that tore into his skin. And so when he cried out to Hashem, Hashem reminded him that the rope was good enough for his ancestor, for Rachab HaZona, and so therefore it should have been good enough for him too. So Rav Pam Zatzal pointed out that when a person does a chesed for another person, it's crucial that he or she do the chesed in the best way possible. It needs to be done in a manner that does not imply or create a source of discomfort or embarrassment, as if the provider had been the recipient. In other words, Rachab HaZona was the provider of the particular tova that was the saving of the life of the children of the Meraglim themselves. That is to say, Pinchas and Kalev. And so therefore what needed to be done was a thought process in the same way she did the chesed, that was the same way the chesed was being done to her. Sometimes when we do a chesed, we have to understand that doing it in a half-baked way is not positive. Our ideal of chesed is to have it done, is to do it in the way that we would want it to be done for us. Shabbat shalom to all.